This is Basket Case Clubs, CPR Group's podcast where we turn basket case clubs into showcase clubs. G'day and welcome to Basket Case Clubs. Today you've just got Steve. Michael's away at the Local Government Association of Queensland Conference in Gladstone, so I'm flying solo, and I'm really pleased to let you know that we're launching through this episode a flood recovery mini-series. It is going to be a real mini-series, unlike some of our other recent mini-series, and it's we're going to be presenting a few interviews, so three-part series. And in those discussions, we connect with some clubs in the southeast Queensland corner that have really suffered some significant flood damage in all cases, a couple of times in a short succession. And today we're talking with Karen Boland from Caboolture Little Athletics. And this particular club kind of gets hit every couple of years with significant floods. And I really wanted to share with you some of the insights that we gained through the discussion with Karen. So through the mini-series, we're going to be presenting some insights from real lived experiences from volunteers within clubs to share with you practical strategies to help prepare your organisation for potential flooding challenges in the future. Recognising that we're likely coming into a drier period now, we're probably going to have a bit of a break from the flooding, recognising that some parts of Australia have, in the weeks just gone, actually suffered both fires and floods in the same week. So we do live in a particularly volatile part of the world. Natural disasters are part of our life here in Australia, and clubs can often find themselves situated in harm's way because often, you know, we'll be playing sport on fields that are constructed on land that you can't really build houses or any commercial property. So for that reason, we need to be even more resilient within our sporting organisations than many other businesses. So the clubs with which we speak, you might say, were drenched in determination to rebuild and recover to come back even stronger. So Karen, in her discussion that you're going to listen to now, talks through some of the wonderful strategies that that club has really been forced to put in place given the struggles that they've faced in relation to floods in over the last sort of, well, as long as they've been around, but particularly the last decade, they've really been smashed by a number of significant floods. So Karen will talk you through the impact of flooding on the club and the local community, recognizing that when clubs flood, it's not only the club that floods, it's often also the volunteers in the organization that are affected in their home lives. So Karen talks through the loss of various, not only equipment, but also significant infrastructure and the significant financial burden that this represents, and recognizing that you can't insure everything. Karen will also talk you through specific resilience measures that the club has put in place because they've been forced to deal with flooding so regularly. So some of these measures include rebuilding structures on higher ground with deeper foundations and support structures, as well as storing equipment out of harm's way. This club has done a great job of putting in place a bit of a process, if you will, for monitoring evolving disaster event situations. And the club's developed strategies to prepare for and respond to flooding. So they keep a really close eye on the weather. They've become weather watchers and monitor tide conditions. And they mobilise their club community to move items out of harm's way when flooding is anticipated. And Karen also emphasises the importance of asking for help and the positive response that the clubs receive from both community members and club members and people throughout the broader kind of southeast Queensland corner. The recovery process, Karen talks about this as being pretty tough, understandably, and a significant undertaking, and points to the fact that it requires the pulling together of a large number of people, and that if, you know, it's interesting, again, as I mentioned, that often we see volunteers stick their hand up to help their club out, and sometimes that means leaving their own home untouched or, you know, focusing on the club first, which for me always really kind of demonstrates the significant community spirit that exists within our community sporting organisations. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Karen, and I hope you really enjoy the listen.
How has the club been impacted by natural disasters in the past prior to 2022?
Okay, so since 2005, we have been flooded 2005, 2009, 2011, 15, 16 and 22 to varying levels of flood. We have what we call our intermediate level of flood, which is just move things to higher ground and sandbag. Then we have our higher level of flood where the sheds all go under, but we don't have infrastructure damage. And then we've had a two total disaster ones where we lost everything, basically. In 2011 and in 2022, both of those floods, the water rose very, very quickly, and we were unable to rescue a lot of our equipment because we couldn't get access to the grounds. And so, yeah, so we had to rebuild some of our infrastructure, our discus nets and the fence around our long jump pit were completely collapsed in 2011, and the concrete in the long jump pit was all cracked and everything as well in 2011, so we replaced it. In 2022, the discus nets and the fence around the long jump pit survived, but the concrete and the tartan didn't. And we don't know whether or not there was already some damage that we didn't know about as a result of 15 and 16, because the tartan may have covered it. So we're in the process of rebuilding our long jump pit at the moment. We've got grant money for that. And so that'll be up and running, built a lot stronger. We've changed the engineering of the concrete. It is a lot stronger to withstand the force of water on the riverside of the long jump pit area. And also we are very lucky we secured grant funds to relocate our canteen to higher ground on our oval. And we're building a shipping container canteen, and it'll be under our clubhouse. Because in 2011, our canteen was flooded till about 30 centimetres below the guttering. And in 2022, it was completely gone. The roof, we couldn't see it. So, yeah, so the water levels were hugely different in between those two total losses. Okay, so after 2011, when we rebuilt the fence around our long jump arena and our discus nets, they were constructed, the concrete was a lot deeper, the posts are deeper into the ground, they have supporting structures so they don't collapse on themselves, and that's why they were both still standing after the 2022 floods. We just basically had to high pressure clean all of the debris that was hanging off all of the fencing and that. And then after 2011, we're very, very lucky that our clubhouse was built in 2015. So we took steps to move our expensive equipment to higher ground so that it won't ever flood. And we rearranged where our equipment's stored so that we know that sheds that go under have got equipment that can just be hosed and washed and, you know, maybe like, you know, hurdles and that, we just clean them and then we just get the old grease the where they fold over because otherwise they get rusty. Shot puts, though, they rust, so we had to replace them. But things like tape measures and that, we can unravel them and clean them and roll them back up again. So it's more just about thinking, if it happens, what is where and how, what do we need to get to really quickly? Okay. Unfortunately, our canteen, because it's in the lowest part of our ground, in 2022, basically the water was just crazy and everything was just, it was like it was in a big giant muddy washing machine and everything just went around. We had holes in the ceiling when stuff had just been like the fridge, the corner of the fridge went through the ceiling, like everything broke. You can just imagine the drinks fridge was all pulverized, pie warmers, microwaves, chip fryers, the whole thing, everything gone, and stock as well, just soggy food and
yucky,
all that.
Muddy food.
Yes, that we had to deal with. So after 2011, we were very lucky that Bunnings actually donated the kitchen cabinetry for our canteen. And one of our dads at the time, he's a cabinet maker, so he installed it for us. One thing we did do is our bench tops are stainless steel, so they were fine. And the cabinetry actually survived the floods. So we were very lucky about that. The council helped us out with they came in and replaced the ceiling in the canteen, and obviously we had issues with power as well. We lost power to the grounds, because the Energex substation that runs the power for ourselves and rugby league went under, and then everyone lost power. We lost the controllers for our floodlights, had to replace them. We were very lucky to get a grant to do that as well, because we had to replace some wiring also because the flood water went up the insides of the poles. So at the time, we applied for grants that to fix what needed to be fixed, but it's on our wish list that we would like to relocate where our e-switch is, because at the moment it is still in the low-lying area. So ideally, it'd be fabulous if it could be up on the second level of the clubhouse here, well and truly above, or even if it was under the clubhouse, it's still higher than it is now. And it's much easier to access because if we can get into the clubhouse end of our field, it's higher, whereas the other end of the field is much lower and it floods a lot quicker. So, yeah, so little things like that. I think if we just have to keep an eye out for grants. If grants come up, then we can move it, because it's not as simple as just unplugging it and shifting it. There's lots of cables and, you know, that the lights are connected to. So it will be quite, I'd imagine, a complicated and expensive exercise. But I think in the long run, it's probably something that we do need to focus on. Yeah. So basically, after the floods, we were very lucky that there were lots of grants available. So one of the grants that we applied for from the local council was they had an infrastructure grant, which we could use as a feasibility study. So from that, we were able to design our canteen. And once we had the canteen designed, we were then able to apply for a grant to build the canteen. So overall, I applied for, I can't remember exactly, I think it was like over 20 grants, but I got 15 of them. And we got $478,000 in grants, excluding GST, to replace our equipment, repairs to infrastructure, like build the canteen, like I said. We received $5,268 in insurance money, donations of $875. And then we also had a GoFundMe page that we got roughly $2,900 from as well. We decided to go down the grant line because we knew that insurance, there were so many clubs in Southeast Queensland that were affected by the flood event, and we were all claiming under the same insurance policy. So the pool is only so large, and if we had have only relied on insurance, we wouldn't have recovered. It's as simple as that. We would not have recovered. And like I said, it was, so we got funds from local, state and federal government, as well as the RACQ Foundation as well. We got money through them too. So, together with the donations. And it was good that we had the donations and the GoFundMe money, because you can't actually apply to replace your canteen stock in a grant, or, you know, or your toilet paper, or your hand towels, all that sort of like incidental stuff that still costs a lot of money. Without the GoFundMe and the donations, we would have had to fundraise to get that. And it's hard work fundraising.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
That you can't get grants for some stuff. You can't get
insurance, like consumables. Yeah. It's like, it's kind of, but lots of, when you lose all your consumables, it adds up. It really adds up to even things like in the canteen, we had to replace cutlery and spatulas and tongs and all that sort of thing. And you can't put in a grant for that. So, yeah. So there's lots of stuff that the big ticket items are fabulous for grants, but and without them, like I said, we would never have recovered.
It's the stuff you don't think about. Like you say, all the cutlery and tongs and spatulas and so on.
Yeah.
The final question, what can you tell other clubs? But also, let's just quickly touch on what you do when you know the water's rising.
Yeah, so basically through years of knowledge and of practice, we watch the weather. We keep an eye on the tides. We know that if we've had days and days of really heavy rain and we've got a king tide coming, that there's a pretty big chance we're going to flood. So we can watch it and we can try and plan as best we can. We put the word out on Facebook. Lots of our families current families and even past families, they don't mind helping. If we put the word out and say, hey, put your gumboots on, we need to move stuff to higher ground, it's a bit exciting. They like coming. They love helping. We get all the four-wheel drives out and the trailers. And so we just have to realise that we are where we are. We're not on top of a mountain. We've got beautiful grounds, but they flood. So we just have to be really proactive, and sometimes it takes a lot of energy and you just have to find it. And I think the biggest thing with us is that we realize that if we ask for help, we'll get it. As opposed to, you know, a small number of people who are on the committee thinking that they have to shoulder the burden themselves. That's probably a really big lesson to learn, is that people are willing to help if you ask them, and if you give them something that's manageable. A lot of people like coming along just to do one small thing and then they feel good.
And what's fascinating is that it's even when people have been flooded at home that
they'll come and help out. That actually happened with us. We had some people who had floods at home, but they couldn't deal with it because they were waiting for insurance companies to come, and they thought they might as well come and help us. And we had some people, because it was on our Facebook page, who they weren't even related. They had no kids here, but they were just like, you know what? I've got a shovel and a bucket and I'm coming. I didn't tell you this. My husband, actually, the army were here, and they came in. We've got photos of them in their trucks, and they were here to help, and they were packing up, and my husband was here, and he came and said, what are you doing? They said, oh, we're heading over to Bribie. And he goes, no, we need help, because our long jump pit had so much mud. It had like this much mud on it. And we were like, how are we going to recover this? And so we've got photos of all the army guys shoveling all the mud off our long jump runway. But then the funny thing is that my husband had to go to work, and he goes, just put the shovels in front of the shed. Shovels went walkabout. So we don't know if the army took our shovels or they left them outside the shed and someone else took our shovels. So we had to add shovels to the list. So the shovels survived the flood, but they didn't survive the cleanup.
Didn't survive the recovery.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was pretty cool though, like the photos of the army guys, and they were just literally just getting in and helping us, because little things like that, it's such a huge job. You just stand there and go, what do I need to do? Where do we start? You know, and so you just have to break it down into bite-sized pieces. You just got to say, right, we're just going to do this shed, and then we have to move to the other shed. And then, yeah. Our line marking equipment that we lost, all of our line marking equipment, it's across the road. It's an old football field chain shed. And that, I know I say the canteen goes under first, but it actually goes under first. And it's like just crazy. And we had pieces of our line markers. There's breeze blocks at the top, like poking out of the breeze blocks after the floods. Yeah, and you open the door and the lids have come off the black line marking paint. So there's brown mud and black paint over everything. So like literally it's like, it looks like a nightclub, the inside of a nightclub, because all the white walls are now black. The ceiling's black. Everything.
What advice could you offer to other clubs?
Stock take. It's annoying. It's time consuming. But if you have a list and you lose everything, you've got your list, because it's proof for either grant purposes or insurance purposes, or just even to ask for donations. If you can prove to someone that this is what we had and this is what we've lost. So regular stock taking with us, we try and do it twice a season, but once a season is probably what happens. Because you'll forget that something broke and you replaced it, or you bought two new things. And if you don't add them to the list and you're dealing with the stress of disaster, you're going to forget until you go to use it and you don't have it. So that's really important. The other thing that we do is cloud storage. Try not save things on devices because, well, they break. So as long as you don't lose your passwords, that's important. Just everything. Put your minutes of your meetings, put photos up there, put lists, put everything up there. I just think communicate with all your members. Tell them how you need help, when you need help. Particularly if you do feel that we've moved gear before and we haven't flooded, because we've pulled the lever going, this is it, we need to sandbag, and then the water goes down and you think, oh, but I'd rather spend half a day sandbagging than 6 months recovering. So just little things like that, and people don't mind. Honestly, they'll help. You just have to ask.
Yep.
So there you have it. Karen Boland from Caboolture Little Athletics. Thanks again to Karen for sitting down and having that chat. And thank you so much for sharing so generously all of your insights, Karen, that the club has gathered over the years of dealing with significant flood events. So I just wanted to close out just to touch on some of the key takeaways from the chat that I had with Karen. So she talked about keeping a really close eye on your stock and completing regular stock takes. Now, this is something that particularly for smaller community sporting clubs where they don't necessarily have a particularly sophisticated point of sale or inventory system because they might not, you know, they might not sell a lot of stuff. So it nevertheless, it's important to keep a close eye on the stock that you've got on hand because if disaster strikes and you don't understand or you don't have a good grasp on that stock that you've got, then the process of replacing that stock or claiming on your insurance or being able to replace it through grants and the like it can be pretty tough because you don't actually know what you're trying to replace. I loved when Karen was talking about cloud storage. Those of you who know us know that we're nerds for this stuff. And interestingly, the big Brisbane floods in 2011 led to the loss of significant club information, documentation, and data. Fast forward 10 or 11 years to the 2022 floods, and interestingly, there was a lot less of that loss. So we did see a significant learning outcome from the 2011 floods, and I think it was a great point that Karen made that if you can digitize your documentation and if you can get that stuff up in the cloud rather than storing it only on computers either owned by the organization or your individual committee members, then that's a great move to insulate you from the potential loss of documentation and data by virtue of natural disaster, whether it be flood or any other, you know, potential disaster that can just wipe out physical infrastructure. Karen touched on the importance of communicating with your members. I couldn't agree more strongly with this. You know, it's often when disaster strikes a pretty challenging time and people are often left floundering and wondering what's going on, not only in their personal lives, but also with their sporting clubs and community associations. And those organisations fill a really important role in society in bringing people together and breaking down those barriers of social isolation, which can become even more prevalent during times of natural disaster. So keeping your members well informed, even if you've got nothing to tell them that you've got nothing to tell them. Keep in regular contact with them and let them know that the organization will be, you know, keeping them informed as information comes to hand. Do some proactive planning. Disaster resilience action planning is a must. If you're interested in that, we've got a lot of resources that we have developed throughout the course of natural disasters over the last decade or so that we can share with organisations that want to be more proactive in becoming better prepared for natural disasters in the future. So if you're interested, get in touch, let us know, and we'll be more than happy to help you out. Where you can apply for grants, Karen made the very good point that you can't get grants for everything. So make sure that you are tapping into those support mechanisms that are often made available by all levels of government in many cases. And finally, she pointed to the importance of flood resilient design or disaster resilient design more broadly. So once again, thanks to Karen for the chat. I thoroughly enjoyed getting some insights from an organization that is probably at the more flood affected end of the spectrum than any other organization with which we work. So really look forward to sharing with you another couple of interviews over the coming weeks with other organizations that we've been able to engage with and get some insights from as well. So you'll certainly see, I expect, some consistent themes as well as some different takes from the different organizations. So as always, thanks to Jess, our producer, for the wonderful job that you do making us sound even more wonderful than we do in real life. Be sure to follow us on all the social channels, subscribe to our newsletter so that you stay in the know about all the cool stuff that we're putting out there into the community. You can find all of our links in the description of this episode. And if you want to give us a review, we certainly love when people tell us how much they love us, but importantly for you, you'll go in the running to win some awesome Basket Case Clubs merch, and we'll be announcing the winner in December. If you haven't already done so, be sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you listen on so you don't miss any of the fantastic episodes we have coming up. There's a lot happening behind the scenes, so you're going to want to stick around for future episodes as well as, obviously, the remaining two episodes in this mini-series. And you will have both Michael and I back for next episode. So as much as we've missed him today, we look forward to seeing him back on the show next episode. Until then, goodbye. Basket Case Clubs acknowledges the traditional custodians of the country on which we record, being Yugambeh, Turrbal, Jagera and Kabi Kabi land. We recognise their enduring connection to land, waters and culture and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respect to First Nations listeners.